post-coronavirus vaccination study sparks controversy and finds immune breakdowns by Court Johnson, March 1st, 2025. And now for another controversial post, a preprint of the Yale Akiko Iwasaki Harlan Krumholtz post-vaccination syndrome study called Immunological and Antigenic Signatures Associated with Chronic Illnesses After COVID-19 Vaccination was recently published. Vaccine blogs draw a lot of heat, but please note that comments touting conspiracy theories will not be allowed, nor will comments asserting that vaccines are responsible for everything under the sun. We're not going down those rabbit holes again. Vaccine studies. Let's get some study evidence out of the way. The fact that coronavirus vaccinations reduce the risk of long COVID is not in doubt. A meta-analysis of 25 studies involving 14 million people concluded that 1 and 2 vaccinations were associated with a 15% and 24% reduction in the risk of coming down with long COVID after a coronavirus infection. Nor is the fact that the coronavirus vaccines saved many lives in doubt. Across the world, over 100 million people have participated in coronavirus vaccine trials. By November 2022, the U.S. has administered more than 655 million doses to U.S. residents, which, a modeling study estimated, saved more than 18 million additional hospitalizations, more than 3 million additional deaths, and $1.15 trillion in additional medical costs. Nor should anyone question whether the vaccines also caused problems at times. The authors noted that rare adverse events such as myocarditis and pericarditis, thrombosis, and thrombocytopenia, Guillain-Barré syndrome, transverse myelitis, and Bell's palsy were associated with vaccination. How rarely did these conditions crop up? Very, very rarely. Myocarditis, usually minor, 4.8 cases per 1 million doses, Bell's palsy, 25.3 per 1 million doses, thrombosis, 0.21 cases per 1 million, Guillain-Barré, 32.4 per 100,000 person years, Janssen vaccine, transverse myelitis, 1.82 cases per million vaccine doses. The fact that vaccine studies picked these rare conditions up at all is a testament to how effective they were at picking up diseases the medical system is tracking. In every case, having a coronavirus infection places a person at risk of contracting these diseases more than a coronavirus vaccination does. On the other hand, it's clear that the studies have been very poor at picking up people with what is now called post-vaccination syndrome, PVS for short. PVS appears symptom-wise to be a dead ringer for ME/CFS and long COVID. Exercise intolerance, excessive fatigue, numbness, brain fog, neuropathy, insomnia, palpitations, myalgia, tinnitus or humming in ears, headache, burning sensations, and dizziness. The fact that PVS hasn't shown up in post-vaccine studies only demonstrates that you can't find what you're not looking for. A big question that will be difficult to answer, given how many people were also infected with the virus, is how many people have post-vaccination syndrome. Immune system tweak. The authors suggested several ways that tweaking the immune system to protect against the virus can, in some people, cause symptoms identical to the virus. The different components found in vaccines, mRNA, lipid nanoparticles, and adenoviral vectors could be activating the pattern recognition receptors, which trigger the early or innate immune response. The spike protein could trigger symptoms. Referencing Dr. Patterson's work, the authors noted that non-classical monocytes of some people with PVS had been shown to contain the S protein. Plus, in animals, the protein has been shown to cross the blood-brain barrier. Finally, the immune responses triggered by the vaccine could produce an autoimmune reaction. The study. The small study took a deep dive into the immunophenotypic profiles circulating immune cell populations, antibody responses, circulating immune modulator levels, spike protein, in 42 people with PVS and 22 healthy controls who had been vaccinated. One possible confounder was that tests revealed that 27 out of 42 people with post-vaccination syndrome had also been exposed to the coronavirus at some point. Most PVS patients, however, reported reacting to the vaccine within 10 days, so it's assumed that their reaction was to the vaccine. Some of the immune findings could, however, result from a coronavirus infection. Results. Not surprisingly, the study found that the health status of the PVS patients was far below the normal and they reported a lower quality of life. The most common symptoms were excessive fatigue in 85%, tingling and numbness in 80%, exercise intolerance 80%, brain fog 77.5%, difficulty concentrating or focusing 72.5%, trouble falling or staying asleep 70%, neuropathy 70%, muscle aches 70%, anxiety 65%, tinnitus 60%, and burning sensations 57.5%. Unswitched memory B cells. The finding that the proportions of unswitched memory B cells, US memory B cells, CD19 plus, CD27 plus, IgD plus, were significantly higher in the PVS patients was intriguing given similar findings in ME/CFS. Two UK studies suggested that energy generation problems are preventing naive B cells from maturing in ME/CFS. NATH's intramural study found higher levels of naive, immature B cells and decreased numbers of mature memory B cells. NATH proposed that the high levels of immature B cells might constitute the primary defect in ME/CFS, potentially leading to immune exhaustion and activation of innate immune responses. T-cell exhaustion. The reduced CD4 plus T-cell subsets in circulation and an increased percentage of TNFA plus CD8 T-cells plus higher levels of exhausted CD8 cytotoxic T-cells again seems reminiscent of findings in ME/CFS and long COVID. The increased percentages of the cytotoxic T-cell subset suggests that the T-cell exhaustion is driven by chronic activation by a virus or pieces of a virus. Increased classical monocytes. Reduced CDC2 cells and increased levels of non-classical monocytes suggest an impaired immune response to the virus, chronic inflammation, particularly in the blood vessels, and an increased risk of autoimmunity. The activation of classical monocytes plays a key role in Bruce Patterson's hypothesis of long COVID-19, a Bruce Patterson interlude. Bruce Patterson, MD, raised a lot of interest and controversy when he went on a social media tour in 2020 to 2021, claiming that he knew what caused long COVID, had developed tests to diagnose it, and a protocol to treat it. Time will tell how right Patterson was about all that, but it should be noted that his hypothesis that an overactive innate immune system that is attempting to compensate for T and B cell deficiencies is very similar to what NATH and others have proposed. Patterson found atypically long-lived classical monocytes carrying the spike protein in long COVID, and very early on proclaimed that post-vaccination syndrome was happening. Patterson also highlighted herpes virus reactivation and asserted that other pathogens, Lyme disease, were also becoming reactivated. Patterson's August 2024 paper used machine learning and cytokine findings to differentiate chronic Lyme disease from long COVID. 2 weeks ago, Patterson and his company, Health Bio, formerly Incell DX, put their money where their mouth was when they announced they'd begun a massive Phase 3, 32-week randomized, 252-patient, double-blind, placebo-controlled, multicenter trial assessing the effectiveness of Patterson's protocol. Selzentry, or Maraviroc, and Lipitor, or Atorvastatin. in long COVID. Patterson may not be all over social media anymore, drawing attention and criticism for his provocative findings, but Health Bio is certainly not holding back about how earth-shattering it believes its findings are. The Health Bio website states that Health Bio has discovered the root cause and solution for diagnosing and treating chronic inflammatory diseases, including ME/CFS, post-treatment Lyme disease, and fibromyalgia. EBV reactivation found. A powerful and versatile technology for analyzing antibody responses. Serum epitope repertoire analysis, SERA, assessed which viruses the participants had been exposed to. The analysis indicated that the post-vaccination syndrome, or PVS, patients were not sick because they had been exposed to more pathogens. Next, the researchers want to see if the PVS patients' immune systems were more activated against proteins found on EBV's outer envelope. EBV uses both these proteins, EBV GP42 and EBV GP350, to bore into and infect B cells. Increased antibody levels against both of these proteins suggested the PVS patients were fighting off EBV reactivation. Vaccines to block EBV GP350 are being studied. A positive correlation between PVS patients with greater antibody reactivity to GP42 and increased TNFA producing CD8 plus T cells suggested that EBV reactivation was indeed turning on the T cells, which were becoming exhausted. Spike protein shows up. The coronavirus vaccines introduce the spike protein, the part of the coronavirus that infects cells, in different ways. mRNA vaccines, Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna, deliver instructions to the immune system to produce it. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine modifies the virus so that it tells cells to produce the protein, and Novavax directly introduces the spike protein. There are many reasons vaccine makers have focused on this particular protein. It allows the coronavirus to infect the cells. It's easy to target. Antibodies to it can neutralize the virus, etc. The authors stated that perhaps the most notable finding was elevated levels of spike S1 and full-length S up to 709 days after vaccination among a subset with post-vaccination syndrome, even in those with no evidence of detectable SARS-CoV-2 infection. This was a bit surprising because by 14 days, the spike protein is usually undetectable. But it does fit with Bruce Patterson's findings of the spike protein in non-classical monocytes long after vaccination or infection. Of course, the idea that the long-term persistence of the spike protein might trigger symptoms via inflammation and blood clotting in long-term COVID-19 is not new. As we've seen in long COVID, not everyone with PVS had high S1 levels. Still, as a group, the PVS group had higher S1 levels than a long COVID group the researchers tested. Predicting post-vaccination syndrome. A machine learning approach suggested that the hormones, hypothalamus, pituitary glands, and neuropeptides associated with stress response and pain-detecting nerves, oxytocin, neurotensin, beta-endorphin, melanocyte-stimulating hormones, or MSH, substance P, were negatively associated with post-vaccination syndrome. Signs of EBV reactivation and immune activation were positively associated with the post-vaccination syndrome. Those included anti-EBV GP42 IgG titers, MMP1 levels, and TNFA plus CD8 T cells. Controversy. Knowing that the findings would be controversial and misinterpreted, the authors emphasized the small study size and the need for replication and validation. Iwasaki even noted that it was too early to differentiate meaningful results from random fluctuations in the data. Some lambasted Iwasaki and Krumholz for even doing the study, given the anti-vaccine movement and now RFK Jr.'s ascension to a leadership position. Dr. Iwasaki called it the first kind of glimpse at what was going on in post-vaccination syndrome, and pledged more studies to come. The misinterpretations and overreactions came quickly. Elon Musk did his credibility no good when, ignoring the fact that long COVID appeared long before the vaccines were available, he told his 218 million followers on X.com that, quote, they are finally admitting long COVID is just vaccine injury, end quote. Stat News reported that Iwasaki said, oh no, really? When told of that. This isn't the first time that Musk has been way off with COVID-19. Musk referred to the coronavirus as a, quote, specific form of the common cold, end quote, stated that, quote, the coronavirus panic is dumb, end quote, and predicted that there would be, quote, close to zero new cases, end quote, in the U.S. by the end of April 2020. He also bet podcaster Sam Harris $1 million that the U.S. would not exceed 35,000 COVID-19 cases. As of February 2025, over 110 million coronavirus cases had been confirmed, and the total is likely much greater. Conclusion. While small, this study was good news for anyone with post-coronavirus vaccination syndrome or any kind of post-viral vaccination syndrome, or PVS. PVS has been an issue in ME/CFS for decades, but it took over 100 million American vaccinations for a few researchers to start taking it seriously. The next vaccine studies, when and wherever they occur, should include post-vaccine syndrome in their assessments. Thankfully, this study came from a highly respected Yale research team led by Akiko Iwasaki. It was very good to see findings broadly similar to those found in long COVID and ME/CFS pop up. The increased number of unswitched B cells and classical monocytes, the T cell exhaustion, and Epstein-Barr virus reactivation all seem to parallel findings in long COVID and or ME/CFS. A familiar theme of innate immune system compensation for a failure of the T and B cells to fight off the virus seemed to show itself. Finding evidence of the spike protein in some cases 2 years post-infection in some post-vaccine syndrome patients also fit with long COVID findings, suggesting that pieces of the virus may still be activating the immune system, and a great deal of work is investigating this possibility. The classical monocyte finding also seemed to echo Bruce Patterson's findings of 2 years ago. It also brought to mind Grisham's unexpected finding suggesting that monocytes play a key role in ME/CFS. Patterson's company, Health Bio, recently began a large multi-center trial of Patterson's protocol in long COVID. Getting results similar to those found in long COVID and/or ME/CFS was only good news for people with post-vaccination syndrome, as it suggests that finding an answer to those diseases will also help them. While bigger studies are needed, the still very small PVS research field got itself off to a good start with this one. Thanks for listening.